I'm Josh.
And I'm Stacey Lee. We're missionaries in Malawi with Gospel Life Global Missions.
And this is the Gospel Life Podcast, where we talk about missions, Malawi, and more.
Today, we're talking about discipleship as a part of the Great Commission. So, how's it been going?
I'm trying to think of something to say other than the cliche, just, it's been busy. Yeah, really busy, busy, busy. Because I feel like I just always say, yeah, I've been really busy.
But you have been.
That's true. That's true. But I'm just trying to think of different ways to say it.
What have you been busy with?
So this past month, in the month of February, we had 2 weeks of pastor training, which we'll talk more about that in the episode. But we did a week of training here in Zomba, and then I went to our other campus in the Lower Shiri in the village of Gabu and had a week of training there with our pastors who are already pastors who come from their villages in order to learn for a week. So how about you? Have you been busy?
Always. The kids are always wearing clothes and using towels and sleeping in their beds. So I'm always busy with laundry.
Always busy with laundry.
Yeah. Taylor had her first netball match this week. We all went to cheer for her. And that was,
she was pretty nervous going into it, but she did a great job for her first game.
She did. She was the goalkeeper. We don't really understand that much about netball, but we're trying.
Yeah, we were Googling on the sidelines because in netball, they wear letters that signify their positions because different positions can only be in certain parts of the field or court or whatever they call it. So like we were trying to figure out what GK was and GS and C and all the different codes were that the girls were wearing.
The GS is the goal scorer and she's the only one on the whole team that's allowed to shoot the ball.
The only one? I thought there was like two that could shoot.
Oh, well, that's what the Malawian woman next to me said.
Okay.
She could have been wrong.
Okay. I thought there was two different ones that could shoot, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
It's if you're not familiar with netball, it's kind of like women's basketball.
It's kind of like if women's basketball married soccer and they had a baby.
Soccer?
Yeah, because
the positions.
Well, the positions and the fact that they're just like passing.
Yeah, that's true. They don't dribble.
Down the court. So the positions stay more in their area. Like defense stays on defense. Offense stays on offense.
But they do pass the ball with their hands, not their feet.
Yes.
And there's a goal at the end, but without a backboard.
Yeah. It just has a few soccer elements.
Yeah. No, I see that now that you mention it.
So today we're going to talk more about discipleship. Pastor training.
Not netball.
We'll save that for another time.
Okay.
And because this is the backbone of our ministry. So perfect time to talk about it because that's what we've been busy with this month.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's jump in. So when thinking about the pastor training part of our ministry here and the discipleship part, it's hard to really know where to start explaining that without going all the way back to the beginning of the mission here.
Yeah. So our predecessors, the founders of the ministry here, Eric and Stephanie Chapman, when they began working here, they began working with a couple of churches and they were planting churches and all of a sudden they were planting a lot of churches. And so when you plant churches, the next step, the most prominent need that arises is to teach the pastors. And when you're planting churches the right way, which I would say is preaching the gospel and people are believing in the gospel, so they're new believers, and then those new believers are forming the churches versus, say, like collecting Christians in order to start a church.
Yeah.
Actual, what we call apostolic church planting, what we see in the New Testament, when the gospel's preached and people believe and those people form the new church, then who's the people that are appointed as the pastors or leaders in the new church? It's the usually new believers as well, or rather immature believers. And so the need for pastor training is so huge from the get-go. And so that's when they started doing classes, what we call today modular classes, and they were doing them some themselves and some of having guests come from the U.S. to teach those classes. And that's actually how we got involved here, which was in, what was the first year we came to Malawi? 2014. So I taught one of those classes in 2014, 2015, in 2016,
yeah,
before we moved here. So that was the beginning. But they also had the vision to say, we need to do more. And so even without having a clear plan and knowing that their gifting was more on the evangelism and church planting side of things, they went ahead and built the campuses that we would need to do more. And they just knew that somebody was going to come along, and it just happened that the Lord called us to do that and to continue the work. So they stepped out on faith before they even knew that there was anybody coming to do this side of things, and someone with more of a teaching gift. And God opened the doors and called us, and now we're taking the ball further down the netball court.
Nice. I like it. Yeah. So it's been an exciting ride for the mission here.
Yeah.
And I always like to point out to people, you know, it hasn't been just the white man going and people repeating a prayer because the white man tells him to. This has been Malawians hearing the gospel and believing it and then being like, I've got to go tell this next village over.
Yeah. And what the Chapmans did and what we still continue to try to do is to train those pastors with a mentality that churches plant churches, and to give them the resources they need to plant churches. And then they have been doing that. They've been going to the next village and the next village and preaching the gospel and starting more churches. And so today we have just over 150 churches in partnership with our organization. And that means when we have class, we have about 150 pastors that show up.
Yeah, that's really cool. So tell us a little bit about the program that you have set for those 150 pastors who show up for the modular classes.
So before we moved here, they were just, you know, trying to do these classes the best that they could. But once I got here, the plan was that I would turn the program in, give it direction and give it a curriculum and give the guys a goal of a certificate that they could earn by completing a certain number of courses. And so I set up that program and we started last February. So now we're into our second year and it's a 4-year program for them to complete that basic certificate. And it has 3 different pillars to it. So there's biblical knowledge, so just knowing the contents of the Bible. There is theological knowledge, what we would call systematic theology. And then there's pastoral skills. So things that you need to know about church planting, evangelism, spiritual disciplines, preaching, pastoring. So those are the things that we focus on. There are a few other little elements that we throw in kind of just to add some flavor, but that's the core of what they're getting. And it will take them 4 years to go through that. So they come here, or they come to the Lower Sheary campus for 1 week, and they do that 3 times a year. And by doing that for 4 years, they'll get their basic certificate.
That's great. And you have said since you first came here in 2014, you've noticed a huge improvement in the kinds of questions they ask and in the way they're understanding.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, absolutely. When I first came here, and we still get some of these questions every now and then because we're still planting churches, so we still have new guys who are coming into the program. But when I first started teaching here in 2014, like all the questions were just, I've heard somebody say this about the Bible. Is it true? Mm. And sometimes it would just be off the wall stuff. Like I heard that Eve, instead of actually eating a fruit, what she really did was have relations with the serpent. Like, I got that question every location I taught, every time I taught for like 3 years.
Wow.
And it was just, they had heard that somewhere. And what I began doing, I don't know if I did this at the beginning, but what I began realizing needed to be done was to answer those questions instead of just giving them the answer. I would say, okay, let's open up. Let's look at Genesis chapter 3. What does it say? You know, and just show them, this is what it says. So this is the answer. Same thing with always get the question about, where did Cain get his wife? So, you know, we go to the text and we see what the text says, and we see, you know, we can't, you know, make up a lot of things that aren't in the text. We've got to go with what the text says. And over time, as me and the other guys who came here to teach those courses were doing that, they have started to think more textually. And so in the class we did this past month, we were studying the book of Titus, and every now and then a guy had an off-the-wall question, and it's fine for them to ask that because it's on their mind. But what really thrills my heart is when guys ask questions that are coming straight out of what they're reading in the Bible.
Yeah.
For example, one that just really excited me, one of them was looking at Titus chapter 3. It talks about mercy. It talks about grace. And he asked the question, what's the difference between mercy and grace? Mm. And so you can see how that's a very mature theological question that's coming from the text instead of just a biblical curiosity or I heard this over here kind of thing.
And practically, they're asking a lot of questions, too. Was it last year you got the question, if my wife isn't a good pastor's wife, should I divorce her or marry another woman?
Yeah, I mean, we still get questions that come from a cultural perspective that is so different from ours that you just are surprised. And thankfully, I have my colleague Isaac there who translates for me and is Malawian, and he can interpret and help me, you know, kind of give me his opinion too, from a Malawian perspective. But yeah, that guy, he was reading about, I guess we were looking at the requirements for a pastor and a pastor's to be a one woman man. He was thinking about how a pastor's to have a wife and manage his household well. And so
he really was thinking about the text when he answered that, though.
But then his solution was, okay, my wife isn't the whatever he thought a pastor's wife should be. So either I've got to divorce her, or I've got to marry a second wife who can meet the standard. And of course, neither of those was the right solution, but he was thinking.
Yeah, he was. Now, this month we have residential students coming back. How is that program different?
So we have the two programs in pastor training. The one is the modular. That's for the guys who are already serving as pastors.
And they're mostly older guys, right?
A lot of them are older. Some of them are young, but majority would be middle-aged to older. But then we started the residential program for the younger guys. And these are guys, most of them are not pastors yet. Maybe they've been kind of youth leaders in their church or something, but they feel a call to ministry. They've been recommended by their pastor. We've done testing to make sure they can read well, that they can memorize things well. And we've interviewed them, and therefore we've brought them into the program. And so they're kind of the second generation of pastors for a lot of our churches. And so we are investing more heavily in them because of their life stage. They can come here for longer periods of time. And what they do is they come here for a term, which is 4 weeks. So they'll be here for 4 weeks, and then they'll go home for a time. Then they'll come back for another term, which is another 4 weeks, and then they'll go back. And they do that. They have 3 terms a year, and their program is a 2-year program. And through that, they'll cover all the same material as the pastors in the modular classes do. But because they're here longer and they're kind of soaking in it longer, it kind of has more depth to what they're able to receive than the pastors who are just here for a few days at a time.
Hmm. I know an important part of especially the residential program for you is not just transferring knowledge.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But the actual discipleship.
Yeah, I think this is something that a lot of people don't understand about pastor training, because pastor training is a type of education, but it is more than what we've made education to be in the West, which, you know, we're homeschoolers with some of our children, so we have convictions about education, that education is always more than just transferring information from one person to another. It transfers values from the teacher to the one who's being taught. And that's even more the case when we're talking about pastor training. And of course, what the New Testament calls that is discipleship. To be a disciple, that comes from the English word disciple comes from the Latin word discipuli, which is
student.
Which is student, yeah. And in Greek, the word is simply a student, a learner from a rabbi, a teacher. And yet, you see in Jesus's ministry, he's not just telling these guys the right answers, he's telling them how to live out those answers in their life. That if this theological truth I'm teaching you is true, that I truly am the Christ, the Son of the living God, as Peter says, then this is all the things that it matters for your life. And so when we're doing pastor training, whether it's the modulars or especially the residential where we have more time with the guys, our focus is on discipleship, on really training them to be disciples of Jesus Christ, not just knowing answers for their exams.
And what are some ways that you do that?
So we emphasize worship. You know, those of us who went to Bible college or even a Christian college or seminary, they all have chapels, and you kind of might get the impression that the chapel is there just because you're supposed to have it. Like it's just what you do if you're in a Christian school, but it's actually builds in a rhythm and a atmosphere of worship in your school. So that's why every morning And every evening, and this is in both programs, every morning and every evening, we start and we begin with worship and with preaching from the Word of God. So that is a habit that we're forming in our lives. With the residential guys, they also have a time where they're expected to have private Bible reading and prayer, and we're all going through the same daily Bible reading plan together so that we're all thinking about the same passages together. They have small groups where they are memorizing scripture together. They're supposed to be discussing things in their life together in those small groups. And so it's more than just, hey, go to class, learn the material, take the exam, and get the... that's part of it, but it's much more than that.
And now, a message from our sponsor, Gospel Life Global Missions.
Do you feel chilly? Do you feel like something is missing in your life? Have you tried clothes? Maybe you want to buy Gospel Life clothes. We have shirts. We have...
sweatshirts.
Sweatshirts. We have hoodies.
Baseball raglans.
And youth sizes.
And long sleeves.
Yes. All,
in lots of colors.
All going to support Gospel Life.
That's right.
So the deadline is March 12th, and you can go to gospellife.org/shirts.
And if you know someone who's not on social media or does not listen to podcasts, and you think they might be interested in a shirt, I'm particularly thinking about the old people in your church. Let them know what's going on. Help them place an order. Maybe take their order for them. Just help other people know. Spread the word.
And we're doing this to prepare for Easter, for Forget the Frock. Tell me what Forget the Frock is.
That's right. Forget the Frock is a growing movement started by my friend Emily Fox. And it's a movement of people who are not buying new clothes for Easter. Instead, they're using that money to buy shirts that support charities that they love. And then they're wearing those shirts on Easter Sunday
church.
To church.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so these will ship and be delivered in time for Easter if you'd like to use your Gospel Life shirts to Forget the Frock this year.
So just make sure you order before March 12th. At gospellife.org/shirts. You will really enjoy a new life of wearing clothes.
For this episode's cultural tidbit, we thought we would interview an expert. We'd like to welcome to the podcast our oldest daughter, Haley Hutchins. Hi. Are you excited to be on the podcast?
Nervous.
So we thought that we would tell people this time about SEMA and its importance in Malawi. Can you tell us what SEMA is?
It's the food that people eat here.
Okay. What's it made of?
Corn flour and water. It's very simple.
Yeah. And is it like baked like a cake, or tell us a little bit about how they make it?
I take forever to make it. So they put water in a pot and then they let it get hot, and then they add a little flour, but not a lot. And then they let it get really hot, and then they add the rest of the flour and stir it a lot. And it's very difficult because I have tried until it thickens.
And then once it gets thick, what would you compare it to?
The texture?
Yeah.
Like stale bread? Well, not stale bread.
Hmm. Somewhere between mashed potatoes and stale bread.
Yeah, mashed potatoes. Kind of like...
But thicker.
Gnocchi Alfredo noodles.
Yeah. It's a tough texture to kind of explain to somebody who hasn't experienced it, right?
Yeah.
Now, tell us about your experience with Sima. You say you've tried to make it.
I have.
When has that been?
Well, our house helper makes it, and she tries to let me stir it sometimes, but I never can, and so she just does it now.
Yeah. And do Malawians just like to eat this meal occasionally?
Well, the city people don't eat it as much, but most people eat it a lot.
And what do you mean by a lot?
Like every meal.
Like every meal, yeah.
Yeah.
At least once or twice a day, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lunch or supper.
And tell us about what Malawians like to eat with Sima.
They make a sauce with it. And really, the sauce is made with a lot of things. Usually, it's egg or like pumpkin leaves. But they can use chicken or beef or fish.
Or you really like it with beans, don't you?
Beans. Oh, yes. I don't like the fish.
Is beans your favorite way to eat Sima?
Yes, by far.
Yeah. Joanna, our house helper, she makes it with eggs and tomato most of the time, doesn't she?
Yes.
Sometimes she uses the fish. She brings... Tell them about the fish, the kind of fish.
Oh, she brings these little fish and they smell super bad, but that doesn't taste that bad. And they still have the eyes in them. But I don't usually eat them.
Yeah, they're whole little fish, about an inch or two long, right? Mm-hmm. We've all tried it.
Abe liked it the best.
Yeah, he did. All right, anything else you want to tell people about Sima that they might not know?
If you try it, there's a 50 chance you will like it, and there's a 50 chance you will hate it.
Good.
That's true. In between.
Are you?
I like the sauce more than the actual Sima.
I don't know that anybody really likes the Sima just for itself. It's more just a vehicle for... It's like plain rice.
Yes. You don't eat the rice.
Yeah.
Or something with it.
Yeah. But, mention, like, if Miss Joanna, if she eats... Miss Joanna is our house helper. I think I already said that. If she eats with us and she eats what we cook for lunch, then what's the problem she has later on? Have you heard her talk about this?
Mm-mm.
She says she can't sleep that night.
Oh, yes.
Because she's so hungry. Even if we have a big lunch, the Sima fills their belly so much.
Mm-hmm.
And how much? Can you describe a portion of Sima that they eat in one meal?
It's a lot. It's just a lot.
Yeah, like a whole plate full of just Sima, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like three enormous scoops.
I eat one.
Yeah, I think one scoop is more than enough for the
sometimes
rest of
half.
Us. Yeah, but yeah, she feels like she can't sleep at night because she didn't get her belly full with Sima, which I think is interesting. Anyway. Well, thank you for being on our podcast, Sally.
You're welcome.
Your podcast debut. Now you're an old pro.
Thanks.
So, did you take any online classes in college?
No, not a single one. I knew I did not have the self-discipline to actually do it.
Did they have online classes when you were in college?
Stop it. It was not the Stone Age.
She's older than me. If you've taken an online class, then you know there's a difference between online learning and... learning in the classroom.
Yeah.
And unless you are the person in charge of your institution's online learning, then pretty much every professor that I've ever known also knows there's a difference between someone taking a class and just getting the content through videos or that kind of thing versus sitting in a classroom, especially a classroom where the class is small enough that you're forming some sort of bond relationship with the professor. There's just nothing like that. And so whenever I talk to guys who are interested in going to seminary or something, I tell them, whatever you do, if you can manage it, go to campus and learn on campus, because there really is nothing in comparison. Well, you take the same phenomenon and apply it to the mission field. So there are places that are hard for missionaries to access, like communist countries, Muslim countries. And there are great ministries in the United States and Europe who have created online resources for the pastors, persecuted pastors who are in those places, to be able to get the learning they need. But that's not like the answer. And the people who are doing that, I don't think would say that's the answer for all the world. The model that we receive from Christ is long-term investment with people, living with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jesus didn't just drop in for a little while and teach some stuff. He was here for decades, years of his ministry at least, and he deeply invested himself in his disciples.
So, I mean, he was with his disciples for what we believe to be around 3 years. So in one sense, that's short. In another sense, when you think of a kind of educational program, it's about average. You know, we go to college for 4 years. Seminary MDiv degree is supposed to be 3 years.
Yeah.
But obviously, you also understand that Jesus's program was much more intensive. Like, these guys weren't just going to class for 3 hours and then going home.
They ate and slept and lived every minute together, didn't
they? For 3 years. So it was a very intense program that he packed into 3 years in his disciples. And we see in the New Testament that pattern being continued in the other apostles. So especially Paul, we know what he did more clearly than some of the others. So he had men like Timothy, like Titus, who he called children of the faith, who he invested in. And in, especially in 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 2, he tells Timothy, I think he's reminding Timothy, I've taught you, now you need to teach other faithful men who are going to teach others as well. Mm-hmm. And all of that, of course, they didn't have the technology, and we could argue about what they would have done if they had the internet, but I think that they still would have done the same thing. They invested person to person, from one teacher to a group of students in a intense way, where they were seeing not just the right answers, not just the information, but a man's life in the midst of his suffering, in the midst of his up days and down days, and doing life with him. And forming, therefore, the habits that their teacher had, and taking those habits and making them their own habits.
Yeah. And I mean, we don't want to compare ourselves to like Jesus. Maybe Paul, that's a little bit of a step down, but in a similar...
I don't want to compare myself to Paul. I wrote my dissertation on Paul, so I'm nowhere near him.
But in a similar way, we're here, we're living here amongst the people we go to church with and the people we do ministry with, and we're they're seeing us every day, our good days and our bad days. They're seeing how we raise our kids, all of those things.
And that's just something that you can't get unless you are committing your life and living in a place. So the guys who are doing online classes for pastors who don't have any training, maybe we should note that the vast majority of pastors around the world have little theological, biblical training at all. And the statistic that's often cited is that 85% of all pastors around the world have less than 1 hour of training.
Wow.
Now, I don't know how accurate that is. I don't know how someone can quantify that exactly.
Yeah.
If you're wanting to get a PhD in missions, that would be an interesting project for you to do research on. But I'd say that at the very least, the problem around the world is very severe. If it's 85% or not, I don't know. But it's a very severe problem that many pastors have not only very little biblical training, but no access. And so when you start from there, it's better than nothing to have an online class.
Yeah.
It's even better than that when a person can travel from the United States or somewhere and give a week of their life to teach. And we have guys who do that with us, and it's fantastic that they get to do that. But the best possibility is for people to move to a place, really get to know the men that they're training, really get to know the culture, know the things they're facing, visit them in their churches, see their church members, hear their day-to-day problems, and then be able to teach them with that perspective. And then on the other end, for the pastors to see them living their life and see the lifestyle and the attitude and the habits that are part of the life, instead of just seeing someone fly in for a week, fly out, or someone on a computer screen.
Yeah. And we had a really unexpected, I feel like, part of that happened, come up recently with us.
Yeah, it was something we didn't really plan. It just happened naturally from the fact that we lived here. And we should note that the school building is right behind our house.
Like beside behind, kind of. Yeah. And so was it the residential students who heard us?
Yeah.
So we have...
they all hear us when they're here.
That's true.
Yeah. But especially the residential students, because they're here for 4 weeks.
We have family worship every night before bed with our kids, and we sing a couple songs, and then we have a little, we're going through, what's the New Testament one that we're doing now?
The Old Testament
long story
one
short.
Was a long story short. The New Testament one is
Old New Story.
Old Story New. By Marty Makowski, I think.
They're fantastic family worship little devotionals.
We'll put those in the show notes.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a fantastic little devotional. It goes all the way through the Bible with your kids. We use it. We've been using it for a few years now. We went through the Old Testament. Now we're in the New Testament.
Yeah.
And then we pray. We usually pick a missionary to pray for and any family members who are sick or hurt or anything. And anyway, so our kids sing pretty loud.
Yeah.
And our windows are always open because we don't have air conditioning. And the students at the school heard us.
Yeah. So they hear us sing about 7 o'clock every night, night after night. And I think what happened was they asked Isaac, who lives with them, what are they doing? And he explained to them the concept of family worship. And I don't know how detailed he got about, you know, they're singing and then they'll have a devotion and then they'll pray or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And a few of the students have said that they've started doing that with their own families now, right?
Yeah, and it wasn't like we told them to do it or have taught on it yet. I mean, we have plans actually in the class I'm going to be teaching this month, spiritual disciplines. I'm going to talk about family worship, but we hadn't even gotten there yet. But the very fact that they knew every night we're singing, and they figured out what that was. And then they were inspired by that to go back and do it with their own families. And it just, it's a hands-on way to see how living with people is different from just coming in and kind of being, and I don't want to be too negative because I'm thankful for the guys who do this because it's from bad to good.
Good,
to
better, best.
Good, better, best. Yeah. So.
Is that a Beth Moore? Is it Beth Moore that I've heard?
No. It's a leadership book of some sort.
No, it's a poem. And well, I think it's Beth Moore. She said, good, better, best. Never let it rest until my good is better and my better best.
Well, maybe Beth Moore does it, but it's also a major leadership book. I know that.
Okay.
One that I hadn't read because I think the title basically tells you everything you need to know.
Oh, I've always remembered that poem though since I heard it in college.
So anyway, when you start with pastors are getting nothing, then it's good or better, but the best, we're talking about ideal.
Mm-hmm.
If you are called to this and you want to put your life into it, then actually put your life into it and move there and get to know the guys and let them see your life. And that's what we're trying to do. It's you can't have the same level of impact in a mission trip.
Yeah.
And that applies to all kinds of ministry. And it's not like it's like just a straight line. The longer you are in a place, like, you know, 2 weeks, you have this amount of impact and then go straight up the line after, if you're able to stay somewhere 3 months, then you have that same level of impact, just that much more, and up and up, just on a regular straight line. No, it's an exponential curve. So that if you're going on a mission trip, really the mission trip isn't as much about the people you're going to impact in the country you're going. It's about you, and it's about you learning and your education and getting an idea of what God's doing in another place.
Yeah.
And you can help, but you're not going to really do a lot for the people because you're in, you're out. And I don't want to say that's not a bad thing, but that's just reality.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you stay somewhere for 2 years, you're going to have a little bit more of a impact. But if you commit your life to a place, then you just, the amount of impact is just off the charts in comparison.
I think too about how, like with short-term visitors, we strongly discourage, you know, giving out any kind of money or handouts or anything, but because we live here and we know the people and we know their lives, we're able to help people here financially in ways that are actually helpful, you know, and with discernment.
Yeah.
In a way that we couldn't do if we didn't live here with them.
Right, right. And of course, you know, we can't help everyone, but that's the point. You know, in America, we have this mentality and we've unfortunately exported it to the mission field. It's this big, we got to do things big. We have to, and to have a big impact means to impact a lot of people, a large number of people.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say those things are always bad. Obviously, Jesus had a ministry to the crowds. So we should have things that are ministries to the crowds. But the real big impact happens when you're having it in the lives of specific people that you know. And we see Jesus having this pattern of, yeah, he was doing some things for the entire crowds, but half the time he was trying to get away from the crowds.
Yeah.
And he was always having them follow him, and he's trying to get away to be just with his smaller group, his disciples. And even within the disciples, sometimes he was like, okay, you guys stay over here. I'm taking these three, Peter, James, and John, with me, and we're going to have special time together, just me and the three of them. And so we see that Jesus, he understood that to have a big impact meant to have a big impact in a few people.
Mm-hmm.
And we see the results of that in the early Christian movement when you have these 11 guys, you know, the 12 minus Judas, and then you see Paul being called, and Paul spending special time learning from Jesus, possibly in the wilderness. And then they are the ones who are going out and going almost literally to the entire world within a generation.
Yeah.
Where there are churches today in India that are believed to be founded by apostles.
Wow.
And so the apostles went to India, the apostles went across North Africa to Ethiopia to southern Russia. Of course, we read about Paul going to Rome and Europe. And and that was because Jesus didn't get distracted by the idea that, oh, my big impact is going to be by having this huge, you know, 5,000 people congregation in the wilderness. You know, he was constantly trying to get away from that so that he could have the true impact on these men that he had chosen and called to be apostles.
Yeah. So if there's somebody who's listening who has maybe wanted to come teach a modular class.
Yeah.
Are you saying that that's a bad idea?
No, not at all. And we actually have guys do that. And if you're interested in doing that with us, I encourage you to send me a message or an email at josh@gospellife.org. And we can see about a time when we need a teacher and if you're the right fit. But those things are absolutely important because they are in some organizations that are doing it, they're doing it that way because they can't have a full-time missionary in that place. But in other areas, it's like us. We have full-time missionaries, but it's really hard for me to do all the teaching myself.
Yeah.
So it's great for me to be able to bring in a guy. I'm thinking right now of Dallas Goble, who's a pastor at Burton Memorial Baptist Church in Bowling Green. Or we have a pastor from Murray coming in June. And it's great for me to have those guys because they can do the bulk of the teaching and get to know these guys. But then I'm there with them. And so whenever they hit a bump in the road or some question they don't know how to answer, then I can help them. And so it kind of gets the best of both worlds. And plus, I think the pastors like it because they don't necessarily want to listen to me talk all the time.
Yeah. And it's encouraging for you to have.
Yeah. It's encouraging for me to.
We enjoyed having
have
Dallas.
The fellowship.
Yeah.
And just to get to sit around and spend some time with guys who are friends, really.
Yeah.
And have the same mentality in the ministry. So
these guys need to bring their wives.
Yeah, they do. They do.
So that they can hang out with me.
Yeah. So definitely do it. And it's also a window into a possible ministry for you. I don't want to say this too much because there might be churches that are saying, we don't want our pastor to go because maybe he'll be called to the mission field. But the reality is that I'm here because I did that. Just be prepared that if you come, God may lay on your heart a burden for this ministry, and then that's going to take you from something that's better to something that's best, and moving to a place that has this need and giving your life for it.
What about people who are listening and they say, hey, I'm not a Bible teacher, I'm not a missionary, but I would still like to help. I'd still like to be a part of this in some way.
Yeah. So we have other needs that help with pastor training. For example, we had people give last year for Bibles, and we still have a Bible fund set up, and we're giving those Bibles to pastors, to the students in the residential program, as well as to the churches. And also sometimes we have special projects to make our campuses work a little bit better for the programs that we're doing. Like right now, we're getting ready to redo our kitchen here in Zomba. It's about a $5,000 project to redo this kitchen to just
make the kitchen. And by kitchen, we mean they're currently cooking in a falling down, halfway built old brick building.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. House, abandoned house.
Abandoned house. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're redoing that to have an outdoor kitchen where they can cook that sema that Haley was talking about in a nicer environment that works better for the ladies who do the work there. And so we have things like that, but then we also have student sponsorships for our residential students. And that's how we pay for that program. So the students who come here for the residential program, they don't pay any tuition. They have to pay for their transportation to get here, and they pay a 2,000 kwacha application fee, which 2,000 kwacha is
about $2.60.
Yeah, about $2.60. Very exact. I like that.
I remembered that 1,000 is $1.30.
Okay, so they pay about $2.60 for their application fee, but beyond that, they don't pay tuition. So we rely on people to sponsor students, and that's $30 a month or $360 a year. And when you do that, we send you a student profile of the student you're sponsoring, so you know who they are, if they're married, have children, where they go to church, where they're from, their prayer requests, so you can pray for them by name and specifically. And right now, we have only about, I think, 4 students left who still need sponsorship. But this summer, we take new applications because it's a 2-year program. We'll have another class that's starting in the fall, and I'm using American seasons for our American listeners.
Right.
So we'll have probably about another 30 students coming in. So that's 30 more sponsors that we'll need by October for those students.
And it's not that if somebody doesn't get sponsored, they can't come. It's right. Just that part of the ministry is underfunded.
That's right. So we're having to tighten our belt in other areas in order to buy the food and pay the cooks and
keep the lights on,
buy the materials that they use.
It's a very shoestring budget that you guys do this stuff on. Yeah,
they're not here living in luxury by any means.
Not at all.
But that's part of the design too. Like, we want a program where they're going to go back. We don't want them to get used to the good life here.
Don't want it to be posh and dangerous.
That,
like Southern.
Yeah, that's what John Piper said about Southern Seminary, which he loves and we love.
Right.
But he said Southern Seminary is posh and dangerous, that you get used to the nice amenities at campus, and then you may not. And you may not ever want to go to the mission field because you're used to a certain lifestyle. And the same thing is true in a lot of places around the world, if you get a student who's from a village lifestyle, who's from used to farming to make their living, and then you give them a bachelor's degree or master's degree education in a city on a nice campus, they're never going back to their village and farming and pastoring their church. Mm-mm. They're just not. And so our program is designed where, yeah, we're taking care of the guys and they're not starving or suffering in any way, but it's not fancy.
It's beans and SEMA most nights, right?
Yeah. So that they will go back to their villages, go back to farming or their small businesses and pastoring or starting churches in the places that need them, and not expect at the end of their program, oh, now I'm graduated, I have to have a full-time job in ministry. Because really in countries like Malawi, that what there might be 12 full-time jobs in churches,
paying
in the entire
pastor, yeah,
among Baptists, I should say, in the entire country. So when we're training guys beyond their the place they're coming from, then we're really not accomplishing anything.
Yeah, but we're not doing that.
That was an incredible rabbit that we just traced at the end, but it was, I hope it was helpful.
I think so.
Yeah.
So I just have one more thing I wanted to say before we end. So we have two night guards at our house, and one of them is in the residential program here. And I saw him after church one Sunday when he was here during the month of January. And I asked him, you know, hey, how's school going? His English is really good. He said, oh, it's great. And I said, I hear your teachers are terrible. And he looked at me and he was so confused for a minute. I mean, I could like see him processing it and trying to figure it out. And then he just started cracking up and he was like, no, no.
Sarcasm does not always translate.
No, but he got it. He got the joke. Yeah.
So now time for your favorite segment with the best name. What you reading?
What you reading?
Did you think of a better name? That was your challenge last episode.
I completely forgot.
So what you reading?
I just a couple days ago started reading, or actually listening to Where the Crawdad Sings. The Crawdads Sing, okay. I think is actually. I've heard it recommended by a ton of people. Everybody says it's amazing.
I've seen a lot of people saying this is a really good book.
Yeah, I'm not
fiction,
very far,
we should say.
Yeah, not very far into it yet, but it's got me. It's
so
got me hooked.
So without any spoilers.
Like I don't even know any spoilers yet.
What's it even about other than crawdads?
It's about, it hasn't mentioned crawdads yet, so I don't know. But it's about a little girl named Kaya who basically has to raise herself.
Okay.
Out in the marsh, the swampy marsh of North Carolina.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I just started listening to, we'll make this an audible edition of what you're reading.
Okay.
I just started listening to Dominion, How the Christian Revolution Remade the World by Tom Holland. And it is so far, I'm just about a third of the way through, and so far it's really good. Tom Holland is a historian, and I've read some of his other books, and he's always kind of interested in religion. But in this one, he's going through the history of Christianity, and he is basically arguing against the progressive liberal way of thinking that Christianity has brought about everything bad in the world. And he's pointing out that, in fact, Christianity is the reason why the horrors of the ancient world aren't around anymore. And it's really the root of everything good in the world. So it's fascinating. And I'd give one little warning is that as a historian that is like a popular historian, more academic historian, he does take a lot of the more liberal datings on the books of the Bible. So if you're listening to it and he's saying, you know, this book was written way after we conservative Christians say it's written, that's just because he's coming from that perspective, but it's not a huge component of the book. So you just know that what he's saying, there are arguments against those things. There are that Paul actually did write Ephesians, for example.
Oh. Yeah. Does he consider himself to be a Christian?
I don't know. I think that maybe he's Catholic or something. I'm kind of reading this without knowing.
Hmm. Interesting.
So, yeah, it's fascinating so far. I'd recommend it. Just, you know that the liberal datings of the book of the Bible, there are serious arguments against that. But other than that, the main message of the book is interesting. Is he's such a good history writer.
And if I listen to it, I mean, I'm not a big enough nerd to even know the difference probably between those datings. Does he bring it up in the book, or
well,
do you just,
I mean,
know it?
No, he does bring up that, you know, he doesn't think that John wrote John's gospel, and that, you know, those are all things that have been typical in liberal biblical studies circles for 200 years now. So he just kind of takes those things and assumes that they're history, which conservative scholars can make good arguments against those. But that's the perspective he's coming from. But that's not the main part of the book. It doesn't hurt the core message of the book. And he's so good at taking things that you are familiar with, that you think you know, and then retelling them to you in a way that it's like, whoa, I never saw those connections, or I never thought of it that way, which I love. The way he talks about the crucifixion, or, you know, I wrote my dissertation on Galatians. He has an entire chapter on Galatians, and I'm just like, I wish I could go rewrite my dissertation.
I don't.
I really don't either, but it's good. It's a good, good book.
I can't wait to listen to it when you're done.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. You can follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Gospel Life Go.
God provides for the needs of Gospel Life through your prayers and gifts. To become a prayer or giving partner, go to gospellife.org.
We hope you join us in glorifying God by growing disciples who make disciples. We hope that you live a gospel life.